The Cold World of Sports with Teddy Tucson and Alex Mandelberg.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back once again to the Cold World of Sports. I am Teddy Tutson, joined as always by my colleague in coldness, Alex Mandelberg. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very good. I'm very happy to be back talking some NFL free agency. It's my favorite off season in all of the professional sports. There's always something going on in NFL off season. NBA has too much. They're paid too much money. You know, MLB, it's an uncapped sport. It's basically just hired guns going everywhere. But the NFL is just a crazy mad dash to try and build a team before the next season starts.
Here's what I'll say about NFL.
Because you never know when a 24-year-old kid's going to just retire off your team.
Well, that's it, right? You just, yeah, I mean, it's so much is happening in NFL free agency this year, not just from signings and trades, but from people retiring, like you mentioned, which we will get very much so into. I thought you were going to be talking about the rugby kid, though.
Oh, jeez.
We'll post this on the episode link.
We're going to tag this. Oh, man.
This kid is
15.
15. I don't know why I thought he was 24 for some reason.
He's 15. If you know anything about rugby, he's an inside center. He's a back.
That's what I thought you were talking about for a second.
Yeah. Oh, man. This kid just beasted.
He gets it off the pitch, and then it's like, yo, your man just blazes on people.
Yeah, just running past
people falling over themselves, cartoon style.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing.
It is embarrassing. I mean, you got to just tip your hat to the guy if you try to tackle him. At least you put some effort in. That's digressing.
But it's NFL pretty interesting agency. About. I mean, the retirements have just been every single one of them.
Let's start with that. Yeah, let's start with that.
I mean, it's Patrick Willis. Basically had a toe injury since college that finally caught up with him this year. And he decided that walking was more important than the game. He walks away. Jake Locker, 26, spent basically 4 injured years in the NFL.
Yeah, and Patrick Willis, right? That's different. Jake Locker, sort of injury plagued from the beginning of his NFL tenure. But like you mentioned, Patrick Willis was a 7 Pro Bowl, man.
7 Pro Bowls in 8 years.
But he was very specific in his press conference saying it was his feet. He just couldn't keep up with the rigors of the NFL.
Yeah, he didn't want – I don't know if he couldn't or he didn't want to do the work that it took anymore. I think it hurt too much. I mean, you just had so much.
This is what Patrick Willis said at his retirement conference.
The quote was, honestly, I pay attention to guys when they're – finish playing, walking around like they've got no hips and they can't play with their kids. They can barely walk. People see that and they feel sorry, but they don't realize it's because he played a few extra years. It's strong words.
It's
from Patrick.
When you read the statements from these players.
I mean, Chris Borland. Well, here's the thing. You have Jake Locker who got injured. Chris Borland. Was fear of future injury.
Chris Borland's story is fascinating.
Worlds is the odd man out. He, if you're wondering, Jason Worlds, 27, is a Jehovah's Witness, and he decided to go off Jehovah's Witnessing.
Yeah, so he basically retired for his faith, but he passed up
About $14 million guaranteed.
I think they said $14-15 million guaranteed. If you look at NFL.com's free agency ratings, he is the number 10 rated free agent. So you're talking about a top 10 free agent, according to the NFL's own website. And under interested teams, Niall, Worlds shockingly announced his retirement through his agent. The linebacker played his entire 5-year career with the Steelers. That status in between signed players Torrey Smith and Pernell McPhee, Jason Worlds, status? Retired.
Retired. He's the weird one. He's the odd man out. He was doing it for fame.
Odd man out.
What do you think of the Cody Borland thing?
Chris Borland?
Or Chris Borland?
Well, I think The Patrick Willis statement, he's very clear about talking about guys who played a few extra years. So it's interesting from his vantage point that you're hearing a veteran talk, right? A guy who's been around, who's seen a lot of things in the NFL locker room.
And these guys are in the same locker room, by the way.
Same locker room, right. Exact same locker room. And Borland, in the short window before this happens, because Patrick Willis announces his on the 10th?
Yeah.
So I think that's a
8 days later.
8 days later, you get this announcement from Chris Borland. So in the 8 days, week or so between this happening, Borland's the guy that you're penciling in to replace Willis in the starting lineup next year.
8 days later, cold world in San Francisco.
Cold world.
Cold.
Bring your jackets out. Your whole linebacker core is like, nah, son, I want to play with my kids. I don't give a fuck about your game.
I want to live.
I'm trying to go to the park and chase these badass kids of my own self.
Quote from Borland, which was just, it's such this like basic instinct of humanity. He says, I just want to live a long, healthy life. Free of degenerative neurological disease.
Yeah, he's really...
That's a mad reasonable fucking thing to ask for in life, I feel like.
Yeah, and when you read the article, it's an Outside the Lines piece on ESPN.com. Again, when we throw articles out there like this, we'll include them on the episode links up on Riffopolis. Shout out again to everybody listening on the Riffopolis Network as well. Forgot to shout that out at the beginning.
Oh, how dare you.
My bad. Still getting my podcast game back up. It's been a while. We're rusty waiting on Mitch to get things up and going, but we're here. Anyway, Borland, he talks about that he wrote a letter to his parents.
Yeah, week four of the preseason.
A game in which he returned an interception for a touchdown, and he basically kind of realized what could happen to him if he did it because he played through a concussion at one point and kind of realized the effects of it. And so – but he's got the quote about the neurological disease that you mentioned where you're just kind of like, oh, my goodness. He's got a level of awareness that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
A 24-year-old
the amount
rookie.
Of research,
I mean, he's not a rookie. He's a second-year player, basically.
The amount of research that he did into it, I mean, the names that he dropped in the address talking about Dave Durson, yeah. And Ray Easterling.
Yeah, and Durson is one of the more famous cases.
That's such a sad.
If you're not familiar with the Durison situation, I think we're pronouncing the last name correctly.
Yeah.
Apologies if we're not. Just a guy who was so successful, very, very much so beloved in the community. And then as the disease states, just sort of degenerated. And I think one of those players who committed suicide but left his brain available for science so that it could be studied. And I think what the quote that you're looking for from Borland is, I'm concerned that if you wait till you have symptoms, it's too late. There are a lot of unknowns. I can't claim that X will happen. I just want to live a long, healthy life, and I don't want to have any neurological diseases or die younger than I would otherwise. That's a very clear,
it's a very reasonable request, by the
you
way.
You can't, you can't really get any ambiguity out of that. Well, why is he walking away from the game? Which brings us to the flip side of the NFL coin, where you have a headline on ESPN, NFL doctor, CTE, quote, rare.
Football is safe. This is an article that ESPN posted.
Wait. What's the gentleman's name? It's Dr. Joseph Maroon, okay? he advises the NFL on head, neck, and spine injuries. Says the game has, quote, never been safer. This dude, first of all, If y'all, like, it's a podcast, unfortunately, so you can't see the picture right now.
This man definitely looks a lot like Emperor Palpatine. Not in makeup.
Your man was there when they built the Empire State Building. You understand what I'm saying? Like, and he wasn't, like, old at the time. Do you know what I mean? But he was in, like, his mid-40s. And, like, now, he looks like Methuselah's cousin.
Here is the thing. If the things that he was saying were actually facts, he would have been making a good point. The problem is the stuff that he was saying was not really exactly very factual. He talked about the fact that in sports from 1954 to August in 2013, we only came up with 63 cases of CTE. But the problem with that is that as recently as the 90s, your commissioner was calling people talking about CTE voodoo witch doctors.
Yes.
So how am I? Yeah, of course.
Also,
you found 63 since you started looking last year.
Right.
I would say that that is a pretty fair number.
Yeah, he goes. We reviewed all known cases from 54 to 2013, and I confidently say that it's rare.
It's never been safer.
And you're like, yo, dude, first we're talking about the pre-production. We're like, how are you going to say confidently you reviewed all the known cases when the whole thing is it's a phenomenon that we don't know its depths of? Like, how are you gonna quantify the unquantifiable right now?
We know that you were in a room burning the files a few years ago. Everything on CT, burn it. Don't let them know.
Your commissioner was just on the fucking Super Bowl pregame show a couple years ago talking about the science was still out, son. And
yeah.
Now all of a sudden you'll be like, well, we went through the case files. How y'all had case files if your science was still out? You're not even listening to yourselves anymore. You're just trotting out old ass Crypt Keeper doctors.
It's a rare disease.
Yo, but here's this quote. It's never been safer. Can we improve? Yes. We have to do better all the time to make it safer. And then,
the only thing that keeps running through my mind every time I read this article about how rare it is what you said in the car. Where I'm like, you know what else is rare? A 6'5" man running a 4.3 40. You know, that's rare. That guy might have some rare shit happen to his brain if he knocks it around for fucking 12 years of his career. Maybe some rare shit might happen to him.
Well, yeah, that's what, like, look, like, yo, here's your whole sport is rare. You know what I'm saying? Your job is rare. Your paycheck is rare. Your existence is rare. You fucking make up who, like, if you're a doctor and you're coming out in this day and age, and I'm sorry. I'm looking at this dude again, and you're like, CTE, nah, never heard of it. Big deal, big whoop. You're kind of like one of these dudes, like, it's not the exact same parallel, okay? But if I came to you in the 80s, and I was like, oh, man, I just feel real sick. I don't know what's going on. I think I might have this AIDS thing that they have. And you're like, get out of my office. That's not real. Like, yo, you shouldn't be a doctor, dude. That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel personally... And if you live 10 years longer, right? Like,
yeah.
If you live 10 years from now and you're still practicing medicine, I get to fire everybody who ever credentialed you in your career. That's the rule. I should go back and be like, yo, you know a Joseph Maroon? Did you ever sign off on him? Did you ever employ him? You're fired. Give me your badge.
He was definitely talking a lot of a weird thing.
It's a rare phenomenon, is this thing. You know what else is a rare phenomenon?
The Chris Borland thing is it's a weird situation.
Well,
I don't think anyone expected him to retire like that.
We were like, this is, I mean, it came out of nowhere. And his quote was, I thought about what I could accomplish in football, but for me, personally, when you read about Mike Webster and Dave Durson and Ray Easterling, you read all these stories, and to be the type of player I want to be in football, I think I'd have to take on some risk that, as a person, I don't want to take on. Now, what is the subtext of what he's talking about here? Remember, ladies and gentlemen, this man is a linebacker, and he plays for the San Francisco 49ers, who have had some ferocious gentlemen play this position before him.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's been in the locker room who had to watch what happened to Aldon Smith this last year. He's been watching Justin Smith dealing with injuries.
Patrick Willis.
This is a guy who's seen what extra years on a player can do to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it made him see that there might be other things that are worth more than just that.
I think also, though, when he says, I have to take on some risk, I feel like that means as a linebacker in particular, though.
Yeah, your job is to tackle. Your job is
you're
to
crazy,
hit.
Though. Well, don't linebackers have the reputation of being crazy motherfuckers? More often
little
than
bit,
not.
A little bit.
I'm saying. I mean, all football players are a little crazy.
Yeah, no, the linebackers you're the engine
stereotypically,
of the
defense. Linebackers are sort of
you're
the dude
you're the dude screaming in the huddle.
Yeah, you're hitting yourself in the head.
Yeah. No, that's the linebackers.
All right? So I feel like that's that subtext where he's like, I have to be sort of extra violent. Particularly, my job calls for me to be an engine of violence, let's say.
Yeah, that's a fair assumption.
I don't really want to do that.
I don't want to.
I don't want your life.
Playing for West Canaan might be your dream, Dad, but it's not mine.
I don't want
your life.
I don't want your engine of
shout out James Vanderbeek.
Shout out to James Vanderbeek.
Loving it. Well, we'll move on now. So free agency, off season.
So that's just retirements and the touch of and throughout all of this, Roger Goodell has been mum.
Oh yeah, Roger Goodell ain't gonna say shit about anything.
I mean, anything.
Nothing.
I will say though that the top comment on ESPN ethers Dr. Joseph Maroon, a gentleman by the name of William Martin. I don't believe that's his real name. I'm sure he's not. He says it's about Dr. Maroon. I'm sure he's not taking any money. I believe this guy, like I believe the House Environmental Committee's one scientist that doesn't believe in climate change and the BYU biology professor that says evolution isn't real. Just because it says doctor next to his name doesn't mean I don't look at who he works for. Boom. You burnt. Those last two things weren't there. It ends after works for. But that man got 353 likes on ESPN for that comment. So not looking good for Dr. Joseph Maroon in these streets. That's
Not saying. Looking very good for him. So we had a lot of moves, a lot of trades, a lot of free agency signings.
Moving and shaking.
All right. So trades, because there were a lot of big trades. What was the trade that piqued your nose the most? I mean, you had Nada going to Detroit, Brandon Marshall and Larry Fitzgerald going to the Jets, Matt Cassel going to Buffalo. You got the Unger Graham trade. You've got the Foles Bradford trade. There's a lot of big trades.
I've had a lot of time to digest this now, and I still don't.
Still don't understand why Bradford and Foles got traded for each other.
I don't get it. I don't get it. I feel like here's a test. Right? You know how you try and trade in Madden and you just start feeling it out and they'll be like, yeah, they're interested, but you got off up a little bit more.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll be like, nah, son, they're not even
looking at you.
I feel like if you had proposed this trade, the computer would just be like, yo, do you know what you're doing right now? Like the AI would become very aggressive.
Yeah,
is what I feel like.
Are you sure you don't want to ask for a couple picks, maybe?
If I'm St. Louis, I understand the trade more and more. All right?
Absolutely. You St. Louis comes out ahead far better in this trade.
But this is where we have to open a door, though, into the can of worms that is Chip Kelly, because he and his shadow lurk throughout this entire free agency discussion.
How
often is Philly on the fucking board that we made?
Philly's all over the board that
in
we made
pre-production.
For free agents. But here's the thing.
You don't know. I just want to take a moment to shout out our thorough-ass pre-production, okay? Y'all motherfuckers don't know. You don't know. It's a podcast. There's a lot of shit that goes on behind the scenes, okay? You'll never see it.
I forgot the Kiko Shady trade, too. That one's on there, too. I mean, there's a lot of trades that went on.
But I still don't get
the Foles Bradford trade.
I don't get bringing Sam Bradford to your team for the amount of money that you're paying him, right?
I think that, and I told you this before, I think that Chip Kelly is so confident in his abilities as an offensive coordinator. I think that he believes, give me 11 dudes, I will get those dudes down the field in the end zone 4 to 5 times per game, every fucking game. I don't care who's on the offense. My schemes are good enough to work all the time. But if we do a 45-second 3-and-out, which is bound to happen with a high-speed offense like mine, I need to make sure I have the sickest defense to at least be able to put the brakes on them. I can't have 15 minutes of ball possession at the end of the game and 45 minutes on defense.
That's, I mean, I do support that theory.
Why, you know, Byron Maxwell, Walter Thurman both got signed to Philadelphia. Those are free agent signings, but I mean, those are big signings to that defense. Two guys who played opposite Richard Sherman and did good jobs doing it.
Here's the thing, though. Chip Kelly and Jeff Fisher both said that they had been offered first-round picks for Sam Bradford, right?
Yeah.
And then we got confirmation that the Cleveland Browns came up with the 19th pick. They were willing to offer that for Sam Bradford.
Yeah.
How does Sam Bradford have this value, though? That's what I don't understand. I don't understand.
Yeah, I can't. It's the man we talk. He's only had, I think, what, two complete seasons in his entire career?
Yeah.
His first season and I think his third season. But the man hasn't played a meaningful football game in a year and a half.
I mean, he's at this point, would it be fair?
He hasn't played a meaningful football game since 2013.
Would it be fair to label him injury prone?
Yeah, that's very fair.
That's all, I'm just asking.
As fair as it comes.
I'm just asking.
You're talking about a dude, all right, his rookie year played all 16. Second year missed six. Third year played all 16. Fourth year missed, missed nine, mm-hmm. And then missed the entirety of last year.
The entirety.
He hasn't played a meaningful game in a long time.
In a very long time. And the other thing is, I feel like Chip Kelly doesn't like to take shots downfield every now and then, yeah?
Oh, he absolutely will take shots downfield.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, no,
Sam Bradford's not a downfield guy. Sam Bradford cannot throw downfield passes. I can't remember where I came across it, but someone did all the math, obviously, nerds, and y'all cool, though. and Sam Bradford, I think basically like, well, who was it? Two of the starting quarterbacks for the Rams this year, Austin Davis was one of the guys.
Yeah, Austin Davis was one of the
Sean
guys.
Sean Hill, somebody like that?
No, Green, wasn't it? It was Hill. No, it was Hill.
Yeah, but both far more downfield passing, more yardage. Sam Bradford, not that guy, man. So for that kind of Chip Kelly offense, that dynamic, game-breaking offense or whatever, it doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Marcus Mariota with Gruden, and they were talking – the big play that they were talking about, that was the zero-Y bubble. That's Marcus Mariota's big play, and Chip Kelly uses it a lot too. It's basically a read option. One guy's running a screen, the other guy's running a go route, and they're stacked on each other. And those, you know, it's basically the way he talks about it, and the way you look at it, and the way you see this Chip Kelly offense work. It is so dependent on one of the options being the home run swing,
and that's not Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford is not a quarterback who I feel like you fear him beating you deep.
Well, then that's the next question then would be, do you believe that Sam Bradford is the starter for the Philadelphia Eagles game one of this season? Yes, no?
No, I don't.
I don't think so. He
does. I don't think he ends.
You think they're going to make the move for Marcus? What do you think? Because Chip's saying – Chip basically is like, oh,
you
we're not –
You can't trust a goddamn thing Chip Kelly says at this point. Well, if I – does Chip Kelly have a family? Do we know this?
Every time –
because if I was a child, I wouldn't trust Chip Kelly. If he was like, yo, we're going to Cold Stone for ice for dinner, I'm like, yo, fuck you, dude. I'll believe you when we pull up in that bitch and you pay for it. I know. Yo, if he was like, yeah, we're going to Disneyland, I'd be like, just take me to the dentist and stop being an asshole, dude.
I understand what you're – but here's the thing. Even when he says things, he'll always kind of say something else. Like he went, oh, we're not going up and getting Marcus. The price is too steep. And you're like, oh, you're not saying you don't want him. You're not saying you're not actively going after him. You're just saying that the asking price right now is more than you're willing to give up, which the asking price right now is probably the RG3 deal. It's two firsts and a second, which is a heavy fucking asking price. It's mortgaging your future. But Herm Edwards would have you believe if you believe that this guy is the future of your team, well, then you are mortgage your future because you're mortgaging your future. Where do you stand?
I mean, you definitely are.
Would you give up two firsts and a second if you're Chip Kelly to get Marcus Mariota? Would you give up your first this year, next year, and a second this year as well?
If I'm Chip Kelly, probably, because I'm a crazy person.
What about Teddy Tutson though? This guy sitting right here. Would you give up your first and your first two picks this year and your first pick next year for Marcus Mariota with this offensive squad?
I don't have any who are my receivers though? I got Riley Cooper.
Yeah.
And a bunch of dudes, I feel like.
Yeah, Macklin's gone.
That's the only thing I'm worried about is like, who am I? I can't just.
But that's the whole idea that Chip Kelly has. It's a give me 11 guys. I think I can guide 11 guys downfield.
That's why you asking me to step into the. I need a second beer, son, because you asked me to step into the mind of a crazy person.
You got spray tan running the ball there now. Okay, the one time. Let's do it now. The one time. I
Are
will
we
ever
do
say
this? Are we
the one
do this?
Time I will ever say
We're gonna explain
this
it right
man's
now, huh?
Christian name on the
First
air.
First of all, look at this fucking Google image of nobodies that showed up. Like, no disrespect to any of y'all, son, but like, I don't know your receiving core, Philadelphia. I don't even know if you know your receiving core.
Yeah. One
of these motherfuckers has a college jersey on. One of them sitting on a bench. I don't even know who he is. It looks like a Facebook profile has been pulled into this Google image thing right now. Riley Cooper's out here looking like a poor person's ultimate warrior. All right.
Oh, jeez.
Yo, this is a dude that looks like Nathan from One Tree Hill over here.
But they got Brad Smith. Brad Smith is
only person that I recognize on the roster, all right?
Brad Smith is a handy receiver. He's a three at best, but he's a good receiver to have.
Anyway, the point is, there's Riley Cooper and nobody. Jordan Matthews, I guess, is all right.
Yeah, but who do they got running in the backfield?
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the one time we're allowed to say.
One of the biggest free agency moves was the running back, formerly of the Dallas Cowboys, now of Chip Kelly's insane factory, also known as the Philadelphia Eagles, whose government name
is DeMarco Murray.
DeMarco Murray. Now, you will come to know him throughout this and many other seasons on the cold world of sports by the name he went by in Brendan Clay's now ex-wife, Gina D. I don't know her name. Brendan Clay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Who was a running back on the Cowboys with DeMarco.
They went to college together.
They went to college together as well. Thank you for please not allowing me to miss any juicy details. This happened in December of last year, 2014, beginning of December. This story actually broke while DeMarco was
beasting.
Was playing in a game. It was amazing. Of course they didn't acknowledge it on the broadcast.
Yeah, nobody asked him a question afterwards.
But Brennan tweeted out the following in the middle of the game. Go ahead and do the honors of reading the text.
You play his wife. I'm gonna play spray tan.
So wait, this is the actual tweet that Brennan tweeted, and then we're going to then we'll act out the actual text messages. So Brennan Clay tweets out Gina and DeMarco's exchange October 5th after I kissed her two kids goodbye at the airport. I left for my workout to the Chargers.
I can't see what my first line is because this dude fucked up taking the picture.
This is the coldest thing. The coldest part about it, I feel like, is this first line. And you are playing...
I'm playing DeMarco.
You're playing DeMarco. So I'm playing Gina, which is I'm starting this line off.
So
and so if you're ready for it, here you go. Here you go. No, no, no. I go first. Because I believe I initiated this round of texting. I don't have a roommate anymore.
He moved?
First of all... Wait,
hey, baby.
Yeah, are you DeMarco?
I'm spraying to you, baby.
The Pit Boy, okay. the charge is called.
Oh, for real? That's what's up.
Yep, yep.
So can I fuck you in your bed now?
You do this all the time. You flip the words around.
So I can fuck you in your bed now.
See how different that is? See how different it is? One is like... kind of innocent and like, I'm just trying to respectfully ask if I can fuck you in your bed. And the other is like, nah, I can fuck you in your marital bed. And that's so grimy. But then she responds, is that where you want to fuck me? But yes. And then you were saying like, yo, you just, okay. But the whole thing is
even
that
this woman in the affair had the moment where like, that's where you want to fuck me? I mean, yes, but you a grimy motherfucker.
Right, you're grimy. And then the next tweet for Brennan is, she saved his number under spray tan. LOL. and then he posted. He blacked out the last four digits. But he goes.
And if you don't believe that's his number, old boy from Vegas, 702 area code
under the name spray tan. So we say all of that to say that if you ever hear the name DeMarco Murray from this moment on, it will only be in two forms. One of them will be DeMarco Spray Tan Murray or Spray Tan DeMarco Murray. Other than that, we call him Spray Tan around these parts. Okay,
that man's Spray Tan. But yeah,
he's the grimiest dude on the Philadelphia roster. Can we just take a moment? Fuck the football talk.
Nobody is having DeMarco Murray over for dinner with their
nobody,
family.
Nobody.
He's not invited to any team functions.
Your man DeMarco go up to his man Ryan Matthews and be like, hey, bro, you want to go out bowling? He's like, nah, son. I'm just hanging out at the crib watching Netflix next to my wife all night.
And I'm gonna be here next to her.
And I want I really enjoy the subgenre.
Here's my thing: when we found out that Ryan Matthews had got his contract
also
signed before DeMarco Murray,
yes,
signed before Spray Tan.
It takes a little bit to work these muscles out. It's off season for us too here in the cold world of sports. By week three, you'll never ever hear that government name again.
You'll never hear that government name again. It'll be
get out my bed, Spray Tan.
But he,
yo, for real though, she was like, I don't have a roommate anymore, and I'm like, y'all was still married. That's so cold.
But that's my question.
What a cold conversation. This whole conversation was cold.
Cold world.
After I kissed her two kids goodbye.
Not I'm his
like,
two kids.
Yo, first of all, I hope the kids saw the tweet. I'm like, oh, I thought we was close, baby. That's so cold, son. I thought we were close, son. You told me you loved me like I was one of your own. I see y'all here on Twitter.
So when Ryan Matthews waited those 4 days because he wasn't sure if he was going to sign with the team or not, do you think it was because he didn't want to back up Spray Tan? Or do you think he was scared that Spray Tan was going to try and fuck someone in his life?
Both. Why can't it be both? Why can't it be a 1A, 1B situation and every 2 to 3 hours, 1A and 1B switch? Do you know what I'm saying? They're like, what you worry about right now, Ryan? He's like, what if I love somebody? And I got to go out of town. And this motherfucker's still on the roster. What then?
Huh? It's a scary, scary thought. But yeah, so you have those two running out of the backfield. They signed Byron Maxwell, Walter Thurman to the defense. Those are some big moves. You pick up Ryan Matthews.
And yet you still feel like something is lurking out there.
They're not done.
Oh, plus they pick up Kiko Alonso.
That's right. Plus Kiko Alonso as well for the defense. They're not done making moves.
Right. And yet, who do you have right now? If you're looking at the NFC East, who you got?
Oh, the NFC East is flip a coin. Every year, someone else is going to win the NFC. I'll tell you who won't win the NFC East this year. Whoever won it last year, the Dallas Cowboys. That's the only thing I will ever tell you about the NFCs. It is such
a... I'll tell you, the Washington football team won't win it either.
It is the most competitively average division in football to me sometimes. I think it's a very competitively average division. I don't think any of those teams are elite. They're all very pretty equally matched in their kind of goodness.
You don't think the NFC South gets competitively average?
No, they're competitively bad.
You told me they weren't that bad. I tried to make the argument that they were terrible, and you said they
terrible.
Weren't.
Terrible. They're not terrible. I mean, they're just – they're like I said, I
– Riffopolis. Riffopolis.
The NFC South.
If you watch
South.
Any NFC South football, I don't think terrible is a strong enough word.
I think two of those teams down there – could have a lot change from just one move. In Atlanta, I think we're going to see a big change with a new coach. And I think Carolina, you would see a big change if your quarterback didn't smile quite as much as he does.
That's fine. That's fine. Those changes can happen. What won't change is the year of terrible football that just happened.
We had a 6-9-1 football team make the playoffs.
Yo. If that happened in your Madden game, you wouldn't even save that shit. And you know that's real, son. Nobody would allow a team with a tie to make the playoffs, dude. They'd be like, absolutely not. Somebody else gonna win.
I will always remember when Donovan McNabb found out that ties occurred when his team tied another team. And he went, I thought we were just gonna keep playing.
Look.
I thought we'd just keep playing.
I don't know how many people know the overtime rules right now, son. If you got worried about your teammates trying to fuck your wife, or you just trying to leave the airport to go to training camp, son, and then as soon as you leave, she out here calling you a roommate, son. Yo, y'all filled out the application for the apartment together. Y'all was a spouse, huh? Now I'm a roommate.
Now I'm a roommate.
Yeah. That's why they're your kids now.
Who do you think made the biggest splash then this offseason?
We're on you for your trade here. What's your big trade?
What's the trade that made me peak my ears up the most?
Not even the best trade, but just the trade that you feel like is the standout of the offseason for whatever reason.
You know what? I think it's gone. The Unger Graham one is kind of my gut instinct because I feel like you are getting a guy who can make an immediate impact where you need, which is the red zone for the Seattle Seahawks, where they had some trouble passing the ball, obviously, in the Super Bowl, kind of with one play in the – but I digress. And on the other side,
shout out to all my real Africans. I had to do it.
And on the other side, you have Unger going to New Orleans. He's still got that man will be.
He's 28.
He will have at least 8 more years in this league as a starting, really quality center.
Yeah,
so
you still got a franchise.
You've got a staple of your offensive line. But here's the thing. The one that kind of made me go, oh, that's a really good move, was the Haloti Ngata to Detroit move. It was you had Ndamukong Suh, who left for Miami, stirred up some waters because the league was – everyone knew what his contract was before the league year had officially started. And they made a great move to bring someone in to fill what was an obvious hole for them now.
I mean, I think as soon – that was one of those deals as soon as it happened, everyone was like, oh, yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes
absolute
sense.
Couldn't have hoped for anything better.
If you're Detroit, you're going, okay, yeah, that fills that void pretty nicely.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Baltimore fan, you got some cap issues somewhat resolved a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they had to deal with cap issues. They're paying Flacco a lot of money.
The chef. Do we call him the chef? Am I one of the only people that actually – does he have a nickname? I don't even remember where the chef nickname originated for Joe Flacco, but I remember hearing it at one point, and I was like, I'll call him the chef.
Call him the chef.
I don't know why. He doesn't really cook it up. He's the slowest chef in the world, son. Your man is the kind of chef that would get your shit shut down by Gordon Ramsay, dude.
But yeah, so that one kind
still
of
still win Super Bowl though. But
that
still
one peaked my ears is a really good one, and also the Kiko Shady trade. That's kind of a
here's yeah. I feel like I'm sorry. Go
all
ahead.
Of a sudden, Buffalo has an offense, kind of sort of. You got Castle now. You got Shady. You got Sammy Watkins. You bring in Richie Incognito. Now you're kind of a thuggin'.
Rex Ryan, your boy, wants a team of bullies, right?
Yeah, he has no problem being
as there. He said. What was his exact quotes of?
Rex Ryan said he wanted to build a bully. That's why he brings in a guy. You don't bring in a guy like Richie Incognito unless you want to build a bully team.
Which is an amazing, I mean, if we're on the subject of Richie Incognito, and he was signed, right? He's a free agency signing.
Yeah, he's a free agency signing. He didn't play in the league last year.
He didn't play. So, but you're talking about a quick turnaround. The only person with a quicker turnaround in terms of getting back in the NFL with worse circumstances, I feel like, would be Greg Hardy going to the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, yeah, that's...
Because Greg Hardy his case still isn't even done.
Well, he's suing... It was dismissed.
Because it's not dismissed, because now he's suing...
No, 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 no. That's Ray McDonald.
Oh, my God. Am I mixing
that
up?
I'm sorry. Ray McDonald is the one. There's so many. I know. There's so many domestic abuse cases in the NFL. It's easy to get them confused. Ray McDonald, yes, who is still a free agent, is
terribly
suing.
Sorry.
He is suing his accuser because he is saying that he can't get a job because you're being told you have to feel for a man because the poor guy can't get a job because people know that he violently beats women.
Right, you're like, that's very, very tough. You've got a very specialized set of skills.
We already talked in the first episode about the fact that you called the cops yourself and had your buddy who worked security
beat the
911 cops there. After the officer had explicitly been told not to do exactly what he had done, he's since been suspended for it. But Ray McDonald is suing his accuser because he can't get a job.
I mean, it's the testimony against Greg Hardy is insane.
Basically, though, if you don't know what the Greg Hardy deal is, if you were listening, because it can be kind of confusing, but. The language of the contract that Greg Hardy signed with the Dallas Cowboys the other day is such that
let's be clear. He's only getting this contract because his accuser didn't show up in court.
Yeah.
And the charges were dismissed.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, didn't show up. So charges dropped against Greg Hardy.
So basically the Cowboys...
And then Jerry Jones rubbed his hands together.
Jumps in. Now, here's the thing. He's going to be suspended some games, so he's not going to be making the $13 million. There's no way he gets to the $13 million because he's just not going to play every game. He's going
to
lose...
Somewhere between 4 to 6 games is what they say.
Yeah.
But knowing Roger Goodell, who knows?
It could be crazy.
He could be 3 preseason games.
Every penny that he is making is on roster bonuses. He has to be on the 53-man roster. And that's where all of his money is. Or in other words...
Now, when we say all of his money, we're talking about $9.2 million of his overall salary for the year, right? Yeah. Non-incentive salary. We're just talking structure, not base salary, but actual... that's $11.3 million in his contract. They're like, okay, dude, we're going to give you $11 million. Your actual salary is $745,000. Now, here's $9.2 million that could be yours. The only way you can't get it is if you fuck up and you're just not on the roster for a week, okay? Every week for the season. Now, you already lost 4 to 6 weeks. That's a tough break. That's a lot of money you lost already. So, gotta pocket that. Now, moving forward, if you can stay on the roster from week to week like a Tarzan, just swinging from them vines, you will get money. That's 6 days. 6 days. 6.5 if we include before the game in case you fuck up on the way to the stadium. You just
beat someone up on the way home.
You just have to not be a shitty, terrible, repugnant human being, and we will give you money.
It's
What are the odds that he fucks this up?
I think Greg Hardy will.
Does he still?
I think he's going to be on his best behavior next year.
I certainly would hope so. But
you never know in Dallas. Dallas is,
this is the Cold World
Sports. It's the tightest, loosest ship there is.
How do you feel if you're the fucking lawyer or the executive or whoever, the agent? You're part of the team, one side or another, that is structuring this deal. You're structuring this deal. How do you feel?
If I'm Dallas, I feel great about it.
No, I mean, like, as a human being, take away the team. No. I'm talking about as an individual lawyer who has to be like, so what do you want to do?
Disgusting.
I come to you as an executive.
I literally am sitting there going,
I had to take you out of Adam Schaefer mode and put you in human.
I am negotiating the ridiculously large salary of a man who beats fucking women. And I have to structure it in a way so that if he accidentally beats another woman, I don't have to pay him as much money. That is a disgusting.
Right? Like, how do you feel if someone comes to you and like, hey, we're going to sign Greg Hardy? And you're like, who's that? Excuse me? Are you talking about the dude who...
The dude who's on the commissioner's exemplars?
Yeah. I believe you're familiar with him. Anyway, we need to structure his deal in such a way that every week he's on the roster... he gets paid. And you would say something like, wasn't that – that's how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works.
I'm like, no. I don't think you understand.
Yeah, you pay a guy every week, right? Yeah.
I think – I'm talking about the 53-man active roster. If he's not on that roster
– oh, for real?
Then he doesn't get paid.
Oh, my God.
From week to week, every week. So can you set it up that way?
So are you assuming that he's gonna probably do something dumb? Is that what you're trying to say?
Who pays you to ask questions?
Nothing. I'm sorry. Let me structure the contract.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's it's a gross.
That's a dirty deal to put together.
It feels gross to put together when you look at the numbers on it.
Unless your boss is Jerry Jones and he corroded your soul years ago, in which case you probably brought it up to him because you're a minion.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He's going to miss some of the $1.3 million too on his workout bonuses because he's going to be suspended.
And then the rest of his money is 8 sacks, 10 sacks, 12 sacks, 14 sacks. Maximum incentive he can make, $1.8 million. That's how you get up to 13 from the 11.
Which is unattainable.
If he gets eight sacks, it's unattainable in theory. But if he gets 8 sacks, it's $500,000. How much money are we paying him per sack?
I'd rather not do the math because it's going to make me hate things.
Cole.
It's going to make me hate things.
Riffalonians.
It's a little bit. I think that would be about 70-something thousand sacked.
That's so many yearly salaries for one sack, dude.
A sack. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of money.
A sack is worth more than every hour I will work.
This world is so cold and unfair.
I could work overtime the next 3 months. I still wouldn't make as much as one sack. This motherfucker could start his season in week 7 and still make more money than me all year. He could tear his Achilles after making one sack and still make more money than me all year. By the way,
you're talking about more money just in incentives.
That's just in incentives. Nixon.
Lord. Yeah, that's a crazy signing. What are the others? What was one of the signings? Is the free agent signings that kind of shook you around a little bit?
I don't want to acknowledge it, so I'm not going to.
Are we not talking about Indianapolis? Full disclosure. What football team do you root for, Teddy?
Well, it's really hard for us to not talk about something when half of us is doing that exact thing. Full disclosure, I proudly root for the Houston Texans. What up? Yeah.
Big Tex.
Yeah.
Big Tex.
Big Tex. What up, Ryan Mallett? I see you. I believe the signing that he's referencing is one of the best receivers to ever play in the NFL, Andre Johnson. signing with AFC South rival, the Indianapolis Colts. And that's a thing. So,
full disclosure, Rivopoulos, I was a terrible friend.
He was a terrible friend. You understand? I had already seen the like fucking video of him, and I was like, I had already been shit talked by fucking supposed friends I went to college in Indiana. So shitty people who are Colts fans, people who take joy from old Peyton Manning videos, the worst kind of people. And this, what did you text me? What did you text me, you son of a bitch?
I texted Teddy. I asked, what do you think behind closed doors Andre Johnson says after his first practice with Andrew Luck?
Do I have to answer this again?
I mean, I'll say it. Teddy doesn't.
I'm not going to let you say it. I look at you can't even see the shit-eating grin. He has so much satisfaction. I'll tell you what I said. What Andre said in this hypothetical scenario, which probably didn't happen. He says to Andrew Luck, best quarterback I've played with in my NFL career. And it's disgusting to even think about.
I understand why it hurts, but Indianapolis,
reuniting the Johnson, youth, that
is
surely.
Goren Johnson. That's some big pickup.
You got T.Y. Hilton down there. You got Andre Johnson sort of filling in the Reggie Wayne slot.
Yeah, you have T.Y. who can always take the top off, and you have Andre who you can throw it
Colby
up to.
Colby Fleener still coming out of the tight end spot. You know, Colts are still a very talented team. They've got some solid pieces that can help them put up some numbers. And I hate all the words that I just said out of my mouth.
Listen, how do you think I feel? I'm a New York Jets fan who won the Super Bowl this year.
Well, I mean, that's brutal for you. But
as a Jets fan, I will say this. I don't know how I feel about us just bringing back the defense that we let leave 2 years ago.
You sure about that?
Revis and Cromartie, they're both going to be 30 this
under
year.
30
they're,
right now.
No, they're 30 when the season starts.
And knocking on the door.
They're, you know, Crow is 30. Revis will be 30 by season's beginning. So Crow, we didn't have to pay a lot of money for, but Revis, we did. What I do understand about the signing is, here's the thing. We don't have a franchise quarterback. If we draft a franchise quarterback this year, which I don't know what we're going to do with Marcus. I don't know if we're going to trade the pick away or if we're going to hold on to it. What I do know is that first-year GMs love draft picks. So
we got to put somebody, your stamp on it.
If somebody is offering draft picks for the Marcus Mariota spot, we will take draft picks because that's what every new GM wants.
There are some people though.
But, well, hold on. But that being said, we are at least 5 years away from a contract with a franchise quarterback that we drafted. We draft him. He's on a four-year rookie contract. That's up. We can finally renegotiate him, which means that's when the Revis deal is up. Because we have an opt-out the last year. It makes sense. That money, if it's not going to a quarterback, let it go to someone. Spend the money. I'm down for that. Oh, all of a sudden, now we've got new...
There's a Sports Illustrated mock draft that has Tennessee taking Mariota now at the number two position.
I can see that as a possibility after losing Locker.
Yeah. I think it's got to be a little possible.
But they did draft Mettenberger just last year.
Yeah, is Zach Mettenberger your future? And there it is, ladies and gentlemen, the answer, a clear... which in many circles means no. If I came to you and I said, hey man, I've been hearing things about this babysitter... do you have any recommendations or references about them? And your response was, how am I going to feel about that fucking babysitter from now on? How am I going to feel about that mechanic? How am I going to feel about that fucking priest?
I mean, you have Daniel Jeremiah, who's got Marcus Mariota going seventh to the Bears. That's not going to – I mean – listen, these are all mock drafts. Nobody really knows. The interesting thing is that after a year of the No More campaign, that all four agree that a rapist, fuck it, let's call him a rapist.
Well, no, this is what I said. This is what I said, right?
We can be politically correct and just say a dude who's most likely a rapist. But like,
if I'm not in a court of law right now. Okay, we're not in a court of law.
That dude probably did that shit. He probably
if we're just talking real street shit right now, if we just have a real casual street conversation, and someone brought up Jameis Winston, huh? And you're like, "Are you talking about that rapist?"
Yeah.
And as of right now, Jameis Winston will not be appearing in New York. That's where it still is, right? It's still in New York. They haven't moved.
No,
it
it's
yet.
Chicago.
Oh, this is the first year it's in Chicago? Okay, so they moved it now. So it's in Chicago. He will not be appearing at the NFL draft either way, regardless of where it is, Chicago, New York. But that this is the first year that it's not in New York for a long time, right? It's
been
a
long, long time.
And across the board,
it's just, because he wants to spend it with family.
Right.
Appreciate the moment at home.
But let's be honest. It is not a good look. It's already not a good look for him to be drafted number one. There's not really anything Roger Goodell could do to stop that, right?
No.
You can't, unless you shut down football. But that,
unless you really just hope that maybe Tampa Bay goes for Mariota.
And it's never going to happen, because Jameis Winston jerseys are going to sell in Florida.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That's going to sell.
Tampa Bay is not too far from Tuscaloosa. They're a football town. Or Tallahassee.
Yes.
And it's a football town.
It's a football town. So it's not a good look that he's going to go number one overall. After all of this focus on domestic violence, interpersonal, interpartner violence, sexual assault, the lack of any sort of judicial
consequences.
The dude stood
on a table in the cafeteria screaming, "Fuck her right in the pussy."
Which, if you're not familiar, is a F-tier meme on the internet where I believe possibly homeless dude, just some dude wandered into a live nude broadcast and shouted, "Fuck her right in the pussy." And then other people started doing that because people are the worst. And amongst those people who thought that it would be very amusing to just randomly yell out that phrase, Jameis Winston stood up on a cafeteria table and yelled that out. While he was already being investigated at this point, right?
Yeah.
For sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
So the staggering lack of awareness or just lack of fucks to give – is not what you would want in what the NFL always talks about in having a franchise quarterback. If you're Roger Goodell, the last thing you want is file footage of you shaking Jameis Winston's hand on stage as the number one overall pick. That's what I feel personally, because that shit's going to run on a loop on every fucking news station across the world, which is it okay that the – like if it isn't – if it still happens, that conversation may still go down. But they're going to have to pull some foul footage of Jameis Winston doing dumb shit at Florida State.
Yeah.
They're not going to have Roger Goodell fucking, "You're not going to get me." That's how I feel like this is, though. I feel like the NFL is like, yeah, he can be in the league, but can't have him touch the commissioner.
We know that Jameis Winston did. We know that he went and met with Roger Goodell. Do you think Goodell might have said something to him about don't come to the draft?
Yes, of course I did. Did you tell me you saw that anecdote about Roger Goodell that came out where they basically – the NFL feels like Roger Goodell as the NFL commissioner is higher than the president of the United States, President Barack Obama.
Wait, what?
Did you not see this?
No.
The NFL holds Roger Goodell in higher regard basically, at South by Southwest this year, one of the he's the guy who's the executive producer at Funny or Die Sports. It's Adam Reichenbach, I believe, and shared an anecdote about Roger Commissioner being, as Deadspin referred to him, a legendary tight ass. But they wanted him to be a guest on Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. And he was almost a guest, and the NFL had a problem because, you know, you're supposed to not take yourself too seriously. You're supposed to be the butt of some jokes.
Yeah.
And that's not really how the NFL does business. They couldn't make any jokes at the commissioner's expense.
Yeah. And the quote here says it went, in an attempt to salvage the interview, Funny or Die countered by reminding them that even the leader of the free world was willing to take a joke, saying, quote, but Obama did it and he's president of the United States. Reinbach said the league that the league shot back, quote, well, he's not the commissioner of the NFL.
Which is fucking ridiculous. But yet, if you want to talk about the level of self-serious tomfoolery, yeah, just the disconnect and just delusion.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous.
Of the Shield. But that is the kind of dude who ends up pulling out of the PBS collaboration on Frontline and brings Jameis Winston into his office and says, you can still be the number one overall pick, you just can't show up. If you're Jameis Winston, you're the happiest kid in the world if he says that to you. Are you not?
Yeah.
If the NFL commissioner calls, if the principal of football, let's be honest, the principal of football calls you into his office and says, hey, you fuck up, you can still play forever, professionally, if you don't fuck up again. Also, the only condition is you can't show up on the biggest day of your professional career as of right now. You've dreamt of it your whole day, being the number one pick, standing on stage. You can't be there. Now, remember that, what, fucking Joe Thomas or whatever, the offensive tackle, was like, I'm going fishing with my dad or some shit like that a couple years ago. Nobody gave a fuck, right?
No.
We didn't give a fuck. We're like, oh, that's cool. This is not that. Jameis Winston is not going fishing with his dad by choice. This is on
No, he's not. He is sitting at home with friends and family. According to him, because he wants to, but it would certainly seem like
Roger Goodell didn't even give him a good cover story. That's how little a fuck Roger gives. He was just like, I don't know, figure it out.
Tell me you want to be with your family.
James is like, well, what am I supposed to tell people? I don't know.
I don't give a fuck.
Be grateful you're playing.
Tell him that you're going to go spend some – you have a family, right? You be with them. Tell them that. Go ahead.
Run off,
Jameis.
And this is what I say. After everything the NFL did, right, which is what you were hitting on, after everything they endured after the No More campaign and that whole theater basically of sort of pretending to talk about something but not really doing it, and just emptiness, very empty campaign. You're going to kick off.
Yeah, we found out, gave no money to.
Yeah, no. You're about raising awareness, which is, I feel like we're all very aware of domestic violence, but we don't have a lot of good policies and resources.
It's such a terrible, I hate that phrase, raising awareness. That was what we learned about. You know, I think if you didn't learn about that with Lance Armstrong, that the phrase raising awareness can be used so lightly. Technically, paying rent at Lance Armstrong's house was raising cancer awareness because he survived cancer. So what
and is – And I go on to talk to people and raise awareness.
What is raising awareness?
Show me on the books where you've actually funded some shelters, where you've actually – do you know what I'm saying? Like,
paid
where
some therapists who,
where,
you know –
where like where you've and actually you've done some treatment in-house with your own players. Where you show me the mandatory counseling. Show me – y'all don't even have independent physicians on your fucking sidelines. You got crazy dudes coming out talking about CTE. It's what, you know what I'm saying? Like, your whole operation is fucked. But the point is that you're going to kick off your 2015 season after saying, how could the NFL sink lower? How could you sink lower? This is what we're saying in the fucking – before we had the show today, when we were just sort of kicking around stuff of what we were going to talk about, we were talking about the draft. And I asked you, I was like, he's really going to be number one, isn't he? And you were like, yeah.
Yeah.
He is.
He's going to be number one.
And that's when I was like, if you're just talking like an average football fan, right? We saw those people on video. We saw average football fans on video when they did all those Ray Rice Street packages. And they had people in the jerseys and they're like, how can you still wear those jerseys? Just average Americans who love football. When they fucking say Jameis Winston, number one overall pick, they're going to be like, they took the rapist first. That's what your average football fan is going to say.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to start your season. That's how you're going to start your fucking new season. How is he still the commissioner?
How? Because 10.
How, Sway?
I have 10 billion reasons why that man is still the commissioner of football, and every one of them equals a dollar. He has turned the NFL franchise into a $10 billion franchise. And at that money, would you fire him?
I mean, no, I wouldn't fire him if he was making me that kind of money, because I would have no soul and I wouldn't know right from wrong anymore. Obviously.
Well, thusly, well, that's the problem, is that, or in other words, the 32 owners of the NFL.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're making that kind of money. You can't. I mean, he's doing such an obscenely good job ignoring bad news, deflecting, and sweeping skeletons under the rug.
Like, we're not talking. I did not see enough coverage of the fact that Greg Hardy's contract is structured in a way that we're not going to pay you for the weeks where you're doing your penance for domestic violence.
Yeah.
We're just not going to pay you for that. We're not. That's the story. The fucking, the lead has been buried on Greg Hardy, which is not Greg Hardy signs with the Dallas Cowboys. It's Dallas Cowboys refuse to pay Greg Hardy for weeks he's suspended for domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story.
And weeks that he's fucked up in any other way, shape,
right,
or form.
And structures contract so that they will not have to pay him if, in fact, he gets another set of domestic abuse charges.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven forbid.
Yeah, it's a really...
It's a very... Depending on how you frame the story, it's very, very different. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's very different.
Yeah, it's there's a... I'm trying to think of the
correct
word.
But that's where all the money... For, all the money was put in the fact that, like, we don't know if it's going to be 4 weeks or 6 weeks that we're just not going to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to pay you for a good chunk of the season.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were surprised because they felt like the Greg Hardy contract was a really – was a kind of big contract. $13 million for 1 year for a defensive end does sound on paper like a kind of big contract. That's actually bigger than the contract that Darrell Revis played for.
For 1 year.
Well, that's bigger.
I think that's it. When you
that's
say,
bigger than the contract that Revis played for last year with New England. But the reason it is structured that way is because it's already basically all but guaranteed that he won't get at least $3 million of that contract. On a bare minimum, it seems like he won't get at least $3 million of that contract.
Yeah, let's figure this out right now. Let's go to calculator.
You're gonna plug in the calculator?
So I'm gonna really just crush my soul here.
9.25 million divided by 16 weeks.
I don't want to do this.
Come on, let's find out. 9.225 million dollars.
That's $578,437 each week.
Just so for being on
so
the
let's
roster.
Let's say Roger Maxx is out and he goes 6 weeks, right? Six weeks.
That's three million.
$3.4 million.
So that knocks this down now to a sub $10 million contract.
So you're at least you're what? Maybe you're about 5.8 is what that comes out to. If you don't fuck your life up and you're on the roster for the rest of the season.
You can go, no, he can actually make a...
Well, no, that's no incentives. That's just for the straight 53-man roster bonus.
Oh, well, yeah, no. That would leave about a little bit over $5 million. That would leave
a little over $5 million. A little over $5 million.
You hit the microphone when you heard that. You're $5 million. Oh, Jesus.
That was pure reflex. You're just like...
$5 million for just being on the roster.
And you know what? This dude might be mad about that. And you got to be like, hey, shit stain. You're the last person that gets
Stop hitting things.
You're the last person that gets to be mad right now. You're still playing football, and you're getting $5 million just for not being a piece of shit. Nobody gets incentives like that. Do you know how much better the world would be if they were like, hey,
you don't know, this is a if you don't know listening, Rafopoulos, this is a ridiculous contract structure. I mean, most when you were talking about
not typical.
The workout bonus is great. Normally these guys, money is guaranteed in salary. That's how they make their living.
Yeah.
Is in salary.
Game check.
Game check.
Game check. I go out there, I do this, you pay me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a salary. It's the same way you go out there, you do your life, all right? I ain't working hourly. I'm working salary. You don't structure it on not getting...
The salary for this player is the same salary that he would be... He is only making a little bit more than a dude drafted in the second round this year will make in pure salary.
He's not even making as much as Jerry Jones' assistant. And I didn't even say executive assistant. I said assistant.
Yeah, probably not.
You know, I didn't make as much as... Because you know what? That assistant has to actually bury the bodies. Executive assistant has upgraded to a point where they just tell him where to bury him.
So then who do you think did best in free agency with all this craziness? Who do you think did best?
Before I see Chip Kelly's master plan unfold...
I can't say Philly.
I cannot.
Because of your heart, you can't say Indy.
I can never say that, ever. We haven't touched on it, which is we've talked about all the other things that's interesting, but we're talking about money right now, and on the other side of the spectrum, and Dobkin Suh getting all the money from Miami. $60 million guaranteed.
Every fucking penny.
For a defensive tackle, that's silly. Mm-hmm. I don't think Miami won at all because that's a lot of money to pay a defensive tackle.
I think it's guaranteeing that they're not planning on paying Tannehill a big contract next year.
Well, I don't believe they ever were. And the only people that probably believe that were Ryan Tannehill. And if he has a wife, it's her.
Yeah, he does.
Okay, well, then that household believes. And I'm very sorry for you guys. It is a cold world indeed. At this point in free agency...
Everything in general, going into this new season, who do you think made the most moves before the draft happens? Who's made the most moves to set themselves up for a new good season? And I'm still calling, by the way, that Adrian Peterson is going to wind up in Detroit.
I'm coming to see around more of that, more so. I think at this point you got to say Philadelphia has put a lot of pieces in place to be a major contender. It's really going to hinge on, I think, who the quarterback is and if they, in fact, have any wide receivers. And if spray tan works in a spread offense. There's so many question marks. It's the ultimate high risk, high reward. I'm also going to say Buffalo made some good moves. I also really like the Vince Wilfork pickup on Houston's part.
That was a good pickup. That's a good pickup.
Anything that leads J.J. Watt to just tweet out, ha-ha, is probably not good for the rest of the NFL.
Listen, if Vince Wilfork, Javion Clowney, and – J.J. Watt could actually all three play a game together. The problem is we don't know if Javion Clowney will ever be healthy ever. But if those three were playing together on a defensive line, well, that is about the scariest fucking defensive line I've ever heard of in my life.
Well, I can tell you where they will definitely play a game, and that is in my Madden 16 franchise because they've just guaranteed that I'll buy that copy. Absolutely. I think at this point it's got to be probably Philadelphia with making moves.
Don't get me wrong, I'm proud of my Jets. I'm glad that we made some moves to be proactive. I think Indianapolis is the team who brought in exactly what they needed. I think Phil is the team that we don't know what they're doing.
I
think Jacksonville made a good move picking up Thomas.
You got to keep naming everybody in the AFC South, dude. You can't name everybody. You got to name everybody but Houston, son, huh? You got to name everybody but the Houston Texans that are making offseason moves.
Vince Wilfork, I said earlier, is already adding to one of the most sick defensive lines.
You ain't shit.
That there is. Run DMC is a good hole to fill what was left by Spray Tan when he left Dallas. So Run DMC's... good person to fill that hole.
Oh, we would be remiss without Reggie Bush going to the San Francisco 49ers.
That's right. You know, finally, someone going to that team. I mean, those poor people have been losing players left and right, just like it's going out of style. I think their active roster right now is like 30 dudes on it.
Going to draft a lot. Going to have a lot of signings going on. A lot of roster spots in San Fran.
Yeah, they definitely need to fill quite a few holes. But if I had to pick one team that really did it for me, you know, I'm going to say, I'm going to go with New Orleans.
Yeah, you think the Unger trade, huh?
I think the Unger trade, I think bringing in C.J. Spiller.
I think the C.J. Spiller pickup can be very, very good for them. With him and Mark Ingram, that's a potent backfield.
Yeah.
That's a very potent backfield.
It's a crowded backfield, but it's crowded full of talented people.
I mean, I can't imagine having too much. Like, it can't be a bad thing.
I mean, poor
with that
fucking
offense,
Mark
you can't
Ingram
have too many
just,
running backs.
Poor Mark Ingram can't just have.
You can line up Spiller. You can have him go out a little bit as well too. I mean, I'm certainly.
Yeah, he does. He can split out wide.
You got a very creative sets that they can run up there in New Orleans behind that. So. I think this is going to be a draft more so than many other drafts where people are going to look to plug some holes with some people who are going to have to play rather instantly.
It's interesting because if I had to say that this draft class had one thing that was really strong about it, it's their running back class. The weird thing is that nobody at the top of the draft needs running backs.
It's going to be a run on running backs in the second half of the draft. I think you'll see late first round maybe a running back or two go, but then it'll probably be rounds 2 and 3 that it'll be
there,
a glut.
There are
of running
people
backs.
Who have Todd Gurley and T.J. Yeldon going 31st and 32nd.
You got Melvin Gordon from Wisconsin.
And by the way,
sneaking into the late first round.
Any
as well.
Other year, those two guys are top 10 picks. Both of
Gordon's
them.
Probably a top 10 pick with the numbers that he put up at Wisconsin.
Yeah,
I mean he's just a quality back. Yeah, but I mean, there's the way the NFL has shifted at this point in time. You got some people who have Gordon and Gurley going on.
Oh no, there's some people who have them going earlier. I'm just saying there's some people who have those guys dropping all
but
the way down.
But I think it's a really, I think this
seconds.
Is one of those drafts more so than any other draft that, you know, there has been a lot of suspense in drafts of years gone by, but this year. So many things are in play in terms of trades, in terms of, well, if this guy's gone, then we're going this
there's
direction or that direction.
There's
going
to be some movement this draft.
Yeah. It's going to be a very interesting draft. So thank you for are we –
Oh, no, that's it.
Yeah, that's
I'm
it.
Good.
That's it, right? I feel like we
– We have covered so damn much this episode, man. Oh, gosh.
Thank you guys once again for tuning in to the Cold World of Sports here on Riffopolis.
We will be back.
For Alex Mandelberg, I am Teddy Tutson. Thank you, as always. Good night, Riffopolis, or good morning, or good afternoon, or what have you. It's a good night for us right now. We're late night burning the midnight oil. Peace.
Hell yeah. Good night.